the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to Beyond the Plates. I'm your host as always, Phil Grant, joined with my regular co-host Martin Woolworth. And I must say, delighted to have here the magnificent Jeff Stalling from Sky Sports. Jeff occasionally appears on the show from time to time. He's been doing it for a while for us now, so it's always brilliant to have Jeff on. Even all the way over in these shores, the iconic clips of the Gillette Soccer Saturday entertains us all. It's one of the things actually I miss the most about home is watching that panel, and who've done a fantastic job of turning their weekend into, even if you don't watch the games, into entertainment watching these guys talk about the games, which many people thought couldn't be done. They've done a brilliant job on it. So Jeff, thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, guys. I was hoping those clips were going to be staying safely within the confines of the UK. That's a bit worrying.
Well, we get them loud and clear over here. Talk a little bit about Soccer Saturday. How long have you been doing it now, Jeff? Because it's almost become now as much a part of English sport and culture as Grandstand did back in the day. Now, the modern day Grandstand Soccer Saturday, where it's a big part of the English football culture. Do you still love it as much as you always did?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely adore it, you know. And I mean, I've been doing it, it seems like, you know, well, since I was a boy almost, funnily enough, I was with Joey Barton, you know, the Man City and QPR and Burnley player this week. And he said to me, he said, Jeff, he said, I've grown up watching Soccer Saturday. And boy, did that make me feel old, because Joey's about 35, you know, so... But we've been going for 20-odd years now, so, and I'll be honest with you, when we first set off, I don't think anybody gave it a chance of succeeding or getting beyond its first season. You know, there were a few people who thought it should be strangled at birth, you know, football show with no football, you know, which is what it is in essence. So, but yeah, look, it's going to outlast me, I think, and that's safe to say.
Well, you say, yeah, you say it goes back all them years now. I look at the start there, you know, the likes of Rodney Marsh and George Best and, you know, obviously the legendary Chris Kamara. I can't do any interview about Soccer Saturday without talking about Cammy. The missed sending off has got to go down.
That's the one everyone talks about.
But there's got to be others. It's got to have some nice little stories for us about Cammy there.
Oh, there are loads of them. I mean, Anthony van der Boer is the obvious one. That's, you know, the red card he missed at Portsmouth, which was absolutely brilliant, you know. And Cammy likes the limelight. So afterwards, you know, I mean, it went viral on the internet. And, you know, Cammy got a call from ABC in Australia, and they wanted to do a little interview with him. And he was happy to do it, you know. But what he didn't realise was they had a full-frame photo of him on screen with the caption, "Is this the world's worst football reporter?" underneath, you know. But there are lots. I mean, there are things. One of my favourites was when he was up at Sunderland against Newcastle. You know, it was a Premier League game in those days, and there's been a penalty awarded, and we're just trying to fill some time because we can't see the pictures. I was trying to fill some time, so I said to Cammy, who do you think is going to take the penalty? And he looks over his shoulder. He said, "I'm not sure. He said, I think it might be David Santon." And I said, "Cammy, I can guarantee you, whoever it is, it's not going to be David Santon." And he said, "Well, how can you be so sure?" I said, "Because the penalties are Sunderland and David Santon plays for Newcastle." You know, I mean, you couldn't make it up, you know, but he is a one-off, you know. And the funny thing is, you know, that within the game in England, I mean, Cammy, he's managed, you know, obviously he's manager at Bradford City and he's manager at Stoke City. And a lot of the top people in the game come to Cammy for advice, particularly advice about players, you know. I mean, although he gives the impression of the contrary, he really does know what he's talking about.
Jeff, doing live TV, as we know, is hard. And that Chris Kamara camp, that clip was classic live TV, where you don't get the chance to edit it out and perfect it. And that's maybe what makes some of this so good, is because it's so off the cuff, it's not rehearsed, it's live. You've got such a wide variety of personalities, all who bring it in. I mean, Paul Merson on the show, loads of times, lovely guy, brings his own personalities, unique coverage of the game. You've worked, as Martin was saying, with people like George Best, Rodney Marsh, legends of the game. you must be really, really proud at how this has worked its way into the culture of football in England, despite, like you say, shows no football.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we are, look, we tapped a sort of gap in the market at the right time. Because if you want to know how your team was getting on, you know, in the days when we kicked off in the mid-90s, you know, you could maybe listen to the national radio, but they went off and did second-half commentary.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so if you supported any other side, you didn't hear their scores, you know. Or you might listen to your local radio station, but you're probably only really hear about your local teams, and you want to hear the bigger picture. You know, and people used to sit and watch, you know, CFAX or Teletext, right, and other TV services where you waited for a page to click over, and eventually you'd see if your team had scored in the preceding sort of 5 or 10 minutes, you know, which was absolutely hopeless. So, yeah, we tapped a gap in the market. But I think you're right. I think a lot of it is about the it's about the chemistry of the guys we've had in right from the early days, you know. Well, as Martin was saying, you know, George Best, Rodney Marsh, Frank McClintock, yeah, Clive Allen, Mark Lawrenson, you know, people, yeah, like that. That was brilliant. And it sort of evolved. So now we've got, you know, a nice mix of Phil Thompson who could start an argument in a phone box, you know, with Merce, whose pronunciation and turn of phrase, you know, that's put the pigeons amongst the cats, that sort of thing, you know. You know, and Tiss, who's nice and laid back, you know, and Charlie Nicholas, who's sort of, you know, 60 going on 21,
yes,
with his diamond stud earring. It's a nice chemistry, you know, Alan McAnally when he sits in as well. And we like to treat it like entertainment because football and sport is, but yeah, equally, you know, you want to give it, you know, you want to be serious about the topics you want to be serious about. But at the end of the day, you've got to remember, it's a game. You know, it's entertainment. People pay their money to go to a match to be entertained, not to see nil-nil draws.
That's right.
Yeah. Jeff, I want to ask you about something Phil and I actually were just talking about off air a few minutes ago. And that's internationals and England in particular.
Yeah.
Why is it that we, as in England, struggle so much in major tournaments now? I mean, perennial world beaters in qualifying. And I've just got this mental block when it gets, you know, to the big stage. What, in your opinion, what's that down to?
Well, I think there's a host of reasons. I mean, first of all, I think the, you know, the Premier League is, it just rules football in this country. You know, as a Salford lad, you know, Manchester,
yeah,
United fans, given the choice of Manchester United winning the Premier League or England winning the World Cup, well, it isn't a choice. They pick Man United every single time. So it's a sort of mentality that runs throughout our game. You know, the Premier League is exhausting, you know. I mean, every single game is a big game. There are no easy games. I know it's a cliche. You add to that the fact that there aren't enough English players to choose from for Gareth Southgate now, as it is, you know. He's got a handful of English players at the top clubs. You know, look at Manchester City now. How many English players are regularly turning out in their first team? You know, John Stones from time to time, Raheem Sterling occasionally, but the rest, no English players in there, you know. And that's a big issue as far as we're concerned, you know. And I think expectation as well, because the teams go abroad and, you know, despite the fact we've got such an abysmal record, pretty much since back in 1990, you know, when we went to Italy,
yeah,
then the public has still got an expectation about it. But who knows? You know, hope springs eternal. I've heard this phrase before, but we have a good crop of younger players at the moment. Marcus Rashford could turn out to be absolutely anything.
Yeah.
You know, he certainly looks fantastic at the moment. And I think Gareth Southgate is a good man for the job because he is attempting to bring in some different faces, not always successfully, but some kids who've come up through the system that he's seen play at sort of, you know, under 21 level, and he's been impressed with them there. So, you know, people like Chalabar, giving him his chance now. And, yeah, look, we've got half a chance, but we've got a lot of catching up to do with the sort of Germanys and Spains of this world, that is for sure.
But, you know, when you look at some of the fundamental differences between Germany and Spain, Jeff, you brought something up that's important. You talk about Gareth Southgate hasn't got enough young players to pick from. I almost empathise with Guardiola and with Conte when they don't want to play kids. When you see Frank de Boer getting sacked, the pressure in the job now is unbelievable. And it doesn't matter whether you're at a top club, mid-table club, bottom club. Everyone's petrified of relegation. Clubs want to be proactive. It's almost unbelievable that Leicester stuck by Nigel Pearson for so long, then win the league the year after. Frank de Boer sacked after four games. Why would you come into a Premier League job, take a long-term view and play kids when the easiest thing to do is to go buy a ready-made player? I mean, surely that is detrimental to England.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't, Phil. I mean, that's the answer, is you wouldn't. And that's why they don't. Whether you're a Frank de Boer, who, you know, is, I mean, it's a joke sacking, let's be honest about it, you know, given no chance whatsoever. Whether you're Frank de Boer or, you know, Antonio Conte or whatever, you know, he's not going to put kids in at Chelsea because he knows what happens to Chelsea managers if they don't get, you know, success. So, consequently, people, you know, like Tammy Abrahams had to go out last season to Bristol City where he got 26 goals and claw his way back into the Premier League via Swansea this time round, even though I've got friends who go to Chelsea who say, you know, he's an absolutely fantastic prospect and has been, but never got a sniff. Chalabar mentioned earlier on, couldn't get a game at Chelsea, so he's gone to Watford where he's doing really well and suddenly got into the England side. But, you know, the managerial positions are, you know, potentially so short-term these days that I don't blame them in some respects for not putting them into the side, but I don't know what the answer is. People have talked about, you know, having a managerial transfer window. You're not allowed to get rid of your manager until, you know, January, so they know they've got some breathing space. And that's all well and good. But I know from my team, we were down in League Two last season, eventually got relegated, you know, that a few games into one manager's reign, I mean, I went public on the air and said, for God's sake, sack him or make him walk away, because that was my team and they're going down. So suddenly the idea of a transfer window for managers didn't appeal to me as a fan quite so much anymore. So, look, you've got it nailed on, you know. There aren't enough kids in the side. There aren't enough kids coming through, that is for sure. But I honestly don't know what the answer is.
Well, your boys seem to have turned it around, right? Won the last three games.
Hey, good knowledge. Yeah. It's a culture shock to go down into the National League. And this is going to sound absolutely crazy. It still sounds crazy to me as I'm saying it. But Hartlepool are a big club at that level. And we are the one that everyone wants to beat in that division, because most of the teams there, or a lot of the teams there, you know, never played us before. So you start by knowing that every other team is going to be right up for it. And they have been so far. But yeah, we've got a little toehold, three wins in a row, a couple of big games to come this week. And, there's a long way to go. The funny thing is, we talk about managers and things, and I'm club president at Hartlepool, and I sat down with the new owner at the club and the club chairwoman before the start of the season. We'd given the manager's job to a fellow called Craig Harrison. He used to be at Middlesbrough, but he's never managed at this level before. And the such thing. And we sat there and said, whatever happens over the next few months, his job is absolutely safe in 2017. It doesn't matter how bad results are or what people are turning at him, just got to give somebody a chance. Got to give them a fair crack at the whip.
It is a big club, Jeff, down at that level. And even at that level, there's enormous pressure. I was talking to an individual recently, rather than name him, when he was talking about some of the job interviews he was getting at certain clubs at a lower level and the pressure that exists there. It's deemed difficult to bring through kids at that level because everyone so fears relegation so much and the financial consequence of relegation and what that can do to a football club. So I think that is what's different in Germany and Spain. These countries can bring through young players without the same pressure. There's not the same financial reward for winning the league. Their budgets don't depend on staying up to the same degree the way English clubs do, and I think that allows them a little more freedom.
It's right, but also there are a lot more opportunities to put kids in there. You know, if you're at Bayern Munich, what you, I mean, you've got two or three tough games a season, domestically.
Yeah.
You know, and the same in Spain, you know, if you're at Barcelona or Real Madrid, you don't have to feel your strongest side every week because you know that your second team is good enough to beat some of the sides in La Liga. So you can blood kids in a way that it's impossible in the Premier League. You know, if Manchester United take on Huddersfield, I mean, there's no certainty about the result. Of course, United would be red-hot favourites, but we see season in, season out, you know, that the clubs who are the smallest in the league can beat the biggest and do so. Managers just can't take the chance here, whereas they can in other countries.
Jeff, do you think foreign owners are somewhat responsible for this quick hiring and firing culture that's now developing? When you look at Polish, you look at Swansea last season, they had Bob Bradley for four or five games, he's gone. You look at Polish, to be fair, Leicester stuck by Nigel Pearson, like I said, but for a lot of foreign owners, relegation is anathema. They fear it so much. Do you think that that's partly to blame for some of this quick hiring and firing culture?
I'm not so sure, you know. I mean, I'm not sure it matters too much where people are from. I mean, the Palace thing is an interesting issue because, you know, Steve Parish and the new owners, they clearly have sat down and said, we want to change the style of football. We don't want to be as direct as, you know, Sam Allardyce was, for example. So we want to change the style, and that's why Frank de Boer has come in. But what I think they haven't realised is, you know, you can't change the style of players without changing the players.
Absolutely.
Because
exactly.
They've been bought to play in a certain style, in a certain way. So, look, I mean, I'm not sure because you've got plenty of foreign owners who have, you know, backed their manager and, you know, and stood by them as well. I wouldn't really want to blame foreign ownership. Maybe I would blame them at Palace in the sense that they've had unrealistic expectations of how quickly you can change a club and change its style of football. Bob Bradley, I think people just, it just transpired into being a mistake to bring somebody in who had just no experience of Premier League football or football in England. And it could have been anybody. It didn't have to be Bob Bradley. You point the finger at, you know, many people of that ilk. I mean, I'm looking down now at teams like Norwich. You know, Norwich have gone off and brought in Daniel Farker, who was effectively the number three at Borussia Dortmund. And they've done that because Jurgen Klopp succeeded at Liverpool. And because David Wagner's succeeding at Huddersfield. And, you know, but he's come in and he's got no experience of the Championship. And he might prove to be a big success, but they will have to be mighty patient with him. Because if you haven't managed in this country at some sort of level, then it just makes it that much tougher.
You know, you said it there with Palace. I mean, the Boer thing, if you bring somebody in, you want to change the entire style of play, and to give him 3-4 games is quite ludicrous. It's going to take some time to completely reinvent their style. And I think the one player who's really struggled from that, from the new style, is Benteke. Benteke loves the direct play, and you see him. He's, apart from the miss against Liverpool, I don't really remember a clear chance he's had on goal.
No, I mean, he looks totally isolated. And you know what? Wherever he's been, Christian Benteke, and he's a good player and he's a good goal scorer, his head goes down. You can see his body language tells you that he's not enjoying it. And he is not enjoying it at Palace at the moment. You're absolutely right. He's barely had a sniff, you know. So you've got to build a team. You've got to play your team's strengths, you know. And Benteke's strength, as you rightly say, is, you know, playing more, you know, a more direct manner of football. And given that, he will score your goals. I mean, he doesn't look like scoring this season. I mean, neither does anybody else in the Palace side, you know. And by the way, I wonder at the weekend, you know, 2 minutes from the end, Scott Dan manages to head wide from 2 yards out. What if that goes in? Do they still sack Frank de Boer? Are there the margins?
Exactly. I had the same conversation yesterday. I mean, at what point do the players take responsibility? You know, that goal goes in, they draw the game, maybe even sneak a winner, and you're looking at a completely different scenario. I mean, it's so the margins are so fine.
I think they must have decided before the game that he was going to go, come what may.
You would have
and
to
then,
think.
You know, yeah, I mean, and you know, to be brutal, I think there was probably an element amongst the Palace board who were relieved that Scott Dan didn't score, you know, because it made it more straightforward. It made it simpler to sack him. You know, every Palace fan, you know, I was doing radio yesterday, and every Palace fan who phoned in said, well, we played pretty well. You know, we battered them in the second half. Give him time. And I can only think that the decision had already been taken.
We had Warren Burton on the show yesterday, and we were asking about this, and he seemed to imply that it was more than just football reasons that got Frank De Boer the sack. You know, it's quite sad, and you would like to think that the support for him would be a little bit more rigid than if this header goes in, we keep him. If it doesn't, he goes. It's quite sad. This week, Jeff, Champions League, of course, Mitchell Pochettino said something quite interesting. He said that the reason why England haven't been performing well in these competitions recently is due to their fascination and prioritising of the Premier League. I get his point, because if you do well in the Premier League, the financial rewards are great, rather than prioritising the Europa League and the Champions League. But if you look at last season, Mourinho prioritised the Europa League and brought the Europa League to Old Trafford. Is it a key question of focus, Jeff, on these competitions that's preventing English clubs from doing so well in them?
No, I don't buy that. It's the fact that in the past few years, English clubs haven't been good enough. Yeah. We haven't been as good as Real Madrid or Barcelona, or Juventus or Atletico or Bayern. We have not been in that league, you know. We've been scrambling to try and get back there. You know, so, yes, I mean, of course the Premier League, we've been talking about that. Of course it's tough. And maybe we don't help Champions League clubs enough. I've always thought, for example, that, you know, our Champions League clubs who play on the Tuesday night matches should be given the option to play that previous weekend's game on the Friday night, just to give them an extra day to recover. But I genuinely think it's just that we haven't been good enough in the past few seasons. Mind you, I think we've got a chance this season. I genuinely do feel we've got a chance this season. I think not only are some of our sides better equipped, at least going forward, maybe not defensively, but I don't think the big European powerhouses are quite as powerful as they have been in recent seasons.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it there. I don't think the Premier League helps our teams in the slightest. And like you said, with the game scheduling and, you know, having to play sometimes Thursday, Sunday for Europa or Wednesday, Saturday, you know, it certainly doesn't help our situation. But I don't know if you heard what David De Gea said. David De Gea said yesterday, or might have been this morning, that he doesn't think there's a big gap in between the teams in Spain and England. He said he thinks the difference is that winter break. What are your views on that?
I hate the winter break with a vengeance. I hate the idea of it. And the reason I hate it is, well, a couple of reasons, is one, you know, football, look, over Christmas and New Year, football is a tradition. You have to play then. You have to play then. And also financially, of course, it's a big, big time for them. So people say, well, let's take a winter break in January. Fine, take a winter break in January. And you know what the big teams will do? They'll all go abroad and play lucrative friendlies. You know, so there'll be no break for the players whatsoever. They'll just rake in a few more quid in the meantime. So, you know, I don't really buy that. I mean, it can only apply to the Premier League anyway, because in the lower leagues, you know, they couldn't possibly afford to take a fortnight without having any income coming in through the turnstiles. I mean, in the Premier League, that's not really an issue. But I'm certain that that's what they would do. You know, you see it pre-season now. I mean, for goodness sake, you know, when I hear about players being tired in September and October, well, don't go to the Far East on a pre-season tour. You know, that's the answer to that. It's pretty straightforward.
Before you go, Jeff, you talk about being tired. There was a rumour, of course, back before the summer started, that you were considering retiring. Chris Kamara was asked, I think you probably addressed this earlier on in the interview, but I won't ask you about it anyway. You talked about, you know, people who don't work in broadcasting think this job is a lot easier than what it is. It's not easy. And the prep work and everything else that goes into doing this is intense. Have you thought about retirement? Is it something that's, you know, we're all tempted to put the feet up on the beach. And is that something that's on the horizon for you?
Yeah, it's on the horizon, but I think I'm hoping it's a pretty distant horizon. You know, I remember reading the story in one of the national newspapers, and basically they'd just taken some quotes from another interview I'd given them, and the quotes were accurate. But you know what it's like? You get a quote, but you put completely different words around it. It gives it a completely different meaning, and that was what it was, you know. And so I was woken by a local radio station or a national radio station that morning at 7:30 and said, "Could we just have a talk to you about your retirement?" And you know, I thought, "Am I dreaming here?" So, you know, no, it's morning. So no, I had to ring my boss that day and say, "Look, unless you know something I don't know, I've got no plans for retirement." So, it is hard work. I mean, this afternoon I've been sitting with my head, you know, looking at Scottish Premier League and Scottish Championship statistics and things like that. And, it you know, that bit drives you up the wall sometimes, but it's got to be done. And at the end of the day, guys, you know, my dad was a steel worker and he worked shifts. And I used to remember him coming in covered with all sorts of grime you couldn't get out, and basically absolutely knackered every single shift. Mm-hmm. So whenever I think, this is pretty hard, I always think back to my dad and think, well, actually, you know what? It's the life of Riley, really.
Exactly.
Well, Jeff, I can't let you go without just praising you for all the work you do for Prostate Cancer UK. Obviously, last year you did the walk. Over £400,000 raised is what I believe. So doing absolutely incredible work there from yourself.
It's been, you know, the last couple of years have been absolutely brilliant. And, you know, the support we've had actually from football clubs as well, right throughout the country, and football supporters in particular, has been amazing, you know. But, I mean, it's quite a humbling experience because, you know, a lot of the people, the majority of the people that you walk with, I mean, obviously we walk with a lot of celebrities, who come along and give up their time, which is absolutely brilliant. But we work with a lot of people who are either living with prostate cancer or recovering from prostate cancer, or sadly, in some cases, dying from prostate cancer, you know, and to talk to them and to see them giving up their time when they don't know how long they've got left, you know, to march maybe one, two, three legs of the walk, 20-odd miles a day, and see the physical effort that it's taking out of them is quite humbling. So, so it's very rewarding in the sense that, you know, you look at what these guys are doing and you think if anything that we do and my Soccer Saturday mates and all the celebs who go on the walk and the such like, if we can do anything at all to make life better for them, you know, and people who will get prostate cancer, you know, 1 in 8 in the UK, 1 in 8 men in the UK, it's a scary, scary figure, you know, then it's all worthwhile. And I'm lucky, you know, because I'm fit and healthy, touch wood, and still capable of doing something to help.
Jeff, so few people give publicity to things like prostate cancer. We've got other more popular cancers that grab the headlines. And prostate cancer, as you quite rightly say, is such a big problem. And we know what men are like when not getting their prostates checked. Nobody wants to get it done. But it's incredibly important. It's so brilliant to see people like yourself, you have a public profile, bringing attention to these things. You know, the ordinary punter in the street depends heavily on people like yourself doing this. It's great to see you being responsible and recognizing how important it is with someone with the profile that you have, bringing attention to these things. So incredibly grateful. There's no way we were going to bring you on here without talking to you about that, because that's something that I think it's very, very important that gets discussed, and we're so grateful that you do that. And again, incredibly grateful for you coming on here talking to us. We always love to have you on, Jeff.
It's a pleasure, lads. You know, absolutely anytime.
Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
See you.
Bye-bye.